Shabbat Shalom. I've entitled our parasha this morning, Sweet Victory. The parasha for this Shabbat is entitled B'Shalach, which means in his sending, referring to Pharaoh's finally letting the Jewish people go after 10 terrible plagues. Takes us through Exodus chapter 17. When God led us out of Egypt, he didn't take us straight north, right on up into the land. It would have been a much shorter route, but it would have also taken us directly into Philistine territory. And we were unprepared at that point for a prolonged conflict. Instead, Adonai led us through the wilderness to the Red Sea, accompanying us all the way and manifesting his presence in our midst by a pillar of cloud during the day and a pillar of fire by night. Moses took Joseph's bones with them, fulfilling the promise that when we eventually left Egypt, we were to take his bones. See, Joseph wanted to be buried in the land of his fathers, his ancestors, not in a foreign nation. Chapter 14 opens with a bit of subterfuge. Adonai tells Moses to lead the people south, which will give Pharaoh the impression that the Jews are wandering aimlessly and are now trapped at the shore of the Red Sea. You know, even after the last and deadly 10th plague, Pharaoh changed his mind. He realized suddenly he had just freed 500,000 unpaid laborers. And he had many construction projects sitting half completed. So again, predictably, Pharaoh hardens his heart, saddles up and takes 600 of his best charioteers and a massive army to pursue Israel. When the Israelis saw that the army was approaching, they panicked and they yelled at Moses. And here's what they said. Is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? It was meant as sarcasm because it's basically mocking the Egyptians' obsession with death and graves in the underworld. It certainly wouldn't be the last time that our people wrongly accuse Moses. In fact, three times in just this parasha, Moses is accused of malicious intent. But now, faced with what appears to be certain death at the hands of the mighty Egyptian army, Moses utters the unforgettable words, and no, it wasn't Charlton Heston, "Do not fear. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will never see them again forever." At God's command, Moses waves his staff over the Red Sea. The Lord sends a powerful east wind, so powerful that the sea is swept back and divided into two, completely drying out the ground in the middle to make way for the escape of the Jewish people. We walked through the midst of the Red Sea, a wall of water on either side, and not so much as one Israeli sandal got damp. All that night, the pillar of fire, which had gone before us, was situated behind us, preventing the Egyptian army from giving chase. At daylight, the pillar was lifted, and immediately Pharaoh's army resumed their pursuit and drove right on into the Red Sea, which at that point is still parted. God then threw the Egyptian army into confusion and impeded their chariots. The Egyptians understood immediately that the God of the Hebrews was doing this, and they began to flee. God commanded Moses to stretch out his hand once more over the Red Sea, and those massive walls of water came down thunderously, drowning every single one of those Egyptian soldiers. The Passover and the Exodus from Egypt would become the single most significant event for the Jewish people for thousands of years to come. Dor l'dor, from generation to generation, we're reminded that the Lord redeemed us from the land of Egypt, from the house of slavery. We read that the people feared the Lord when they saw this deliverance. Egypt, too, learned that their gods were nothing and that the God of Israel was the only one. Chapter 15 contains a song, a poetic break in the narrative. And of course, whenever this happens, we're meant to pay extra careful attention. Remember, in ancient times, there were no books the way we have them today. The scriptures were read aloud in the assembly. You had to be a good listener. And whenever you had something like this, a song or a poem interrupting the historical narrative, that meant you're supposed to pay real careful attention because the song interprets the event. And in the Song of Moses, we find these marvelous refrains. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. Who is like you among the gods, O Lord? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in praises, working wonders? And again, the Lord shall reign forever and ever. Miriam and the women danced and sang with timbrels. Our people had been delivered. But Moses' song is so much more than a glorified sigh of relief. It was a series of lofty theological assertions. Two facts of extraordinary importance come through. Number one, the God of Israel is the only God. And number two, man cannot save himself. Salvation comes from God alone. Now, I wish I could say that chapters 16 and 17 are filled with faithfulness on our part. They are not. Instead, they're filled with complaining. In the wilderness of sin, we ran out of food, we got hungry, and we kvetched. We accused Moses of bringing us out into the wilderness to kill us. Well, God graciously sent manna, supernatural bread from heaven. He also sent quail. He also sent instructions, which we didn't follow. We found out the hard way that manna didn't keep overnight. Then we came to Rephidim and we had no water. So what did we do? We blamed Moses. God graciously provided water. And you know, the sad thing is, in all of the scriptures, there's no record of any apology to Moses for the accusations. In chapter 17, the Amalekites attacked Israel. Joshua led Israel's army while Moses went up on a hill and lifted up his staff. And as long as his staff remained over his head, Israel was winning. And as soon as his arm got tired and the staff came down, the Amalekites started winning. What to do? Well, Aaron and Hur knew exactly what they needed to do. They came alongside Moses, they sat him down, and each of them held up one of Moses' arms until Joshua completely defeated the Amalekites. You know, attacking a weary and wandering people was wicked enough. But we find out in Scripture, specifically in Deuteronomy 25, that the Amalekites attacked us from the rear. We're the elderly and those weak and struggling and women with very young children. The Amalekites attacked at the rear where all the stragglers were. God declared his contempt for Amalek and would later instruct Israel to blot out their very memory from under heaven. You know, Purim is coming up, and Haman was an Agagite, a descendant of the Amalekites. And whenever Haman's name is read, we make the noise because his name, like the rest of the Amalekites, is to be blotted out. At this victory, Moses built an altar and named it Adonai Nisi, one of my favorite names for God. The Lord is my banner. If we need a miracle, Adonai is able to provide it. In the midst of life's raging battles, the one who is our banner is always able to come to our aid and lead us to victory. Let me just share a few final thoughts with you from our parasha. You know, some people claim to believe in God, but they'll tell you they don't believe in the miracles of the Bible. Well, the parting of the Red Sea is a perfect litmus test. if you're talking to somebody and they think it's just a nice story, or they don't really believe that God parted the Red Sea, they look for some naturalistic explanation, that's a clue that they really don't believe, and you can help them to see that. Number two, our people repeatedly rejected Moses' leadership, even after witnessing all these miracles that God performed through him. Even after he led us out of slavery in Egypt, we still managed to badmouth him and accuse him of terrible things. In that regard, Moses was just the first in what would prove to be a long line of choice servants of God who would suffer indignities from the very people they came to serve. It should come as no surprise, then, that Israel's leaders and most of our people rejected Messiah Yeshua when he presented himself 2,000 years ago, despite his performing wondrous miracles and doing and teaching only good. But Israel's lack of appreciation back then didn't prevent God from fulfilling his promise and bringing us into that good land. So in the same way, Israel's rejection of Yeshua will not prevent God from fulfilling the promises that he has made concerning our eventual restoration and blessing in the land. Some have failed to see that bigger picture and have arrogantly written off the Jewish people, and that will prove to be a huge mistake. Finally, in contrast to the many who mistreated Moses and spoke evil of him, Aaron and Hur are forever remembered for their wisdom and dedication in coming alongside Moses and holding his arms up. It really is a portrait of two kinds of responses to leadership: those who stand aloof and criticize, and those who come alongside to assist. Which type would you say most closely describes you? I'm reminded of this exhortation from the writer to the Messianic Jews, Hebrews. Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you. May the Lord make all of us like Aaron's and Hur's, encouragers. And whenever we face some seemingly insurmountable problem, our own Egyptian army, as it were, just remember and call on God, the one who gives deliverance and victory, sweet victory.